Well, last Sunday, my job was to try to make sense, or not, of Jesus' first miracle, where he used water to make 180 gallons of fine wine at a wedding party where they already drank enough to be under the influence. If you missed my attempt to make sense, go to our website and watch the video. Spoiler alert, I did not end up making any sense out of it. I hope I made some meaning, but not sense. Today's story is even more attention-getting than water into wine. Same chapter, different location, not in a remote village this time, but at the center of religious and political power, the temple in Jerusalem. Jesus, peace-loving, gentle, turn-the-other-cheek Jesus, walks into the temple not to worship, but to engage in a dramatic one-person protest involving a hastily made whip, turning over tables, and chasing out the sacrificial lambs and oxen, and offending pretty much everyone in sight. The primary targets of his protest, and the ones most deeply offended, were the religious leaders of this temple. But there were others left in his wake: the sellers of the animals and doves, the money changers facilitating the sales, the worshipers who just bought a lamb to sacrifice only to have it scurry away free. Jesus doesn't say how his disciple, or I mean John doesn't say how Jesus' disciples reacted in the moment. He only writes about what they remembered later in some post-resurrection analysis. I rather imagine the disciples were trying to make themselves invisible, maybe slinking into a corner, wondering what they had gotten themselves into following someone as unpredictable as Jesus. If you're familiar with this gospel, you know this story well. It's in all of them. Matthew, Mark, and Luke put it late in Jesus' ministry, in the week before his crucifixion. John puts it almost at the beginning of the story. If you're bothered by that, don't be. John's intent is not to lay out a precise timetable. It's to tell a story in a way that leads people to encounter Jesus as God in the flesh and commit themselves to believing and following. For John, it's important to show early on how Jesus' mission fundamentally challenged the authorities, especially the religious elite who were invested in the way things were. It's only happenstance that this story shows up in our lectionary on the weekend of Martin Luther King Day. So let's talk about nonviolence and violence with regard to this story. The story is often brought up as evidence that Jesus would approve of violence in some circumstances. Many classical artists have painted Jesus actively flicking the whip in the direction of the people, terrorizing them, knocking them to the ground. It's interesting that John is the only gospel to even include a whip in the story. But what does John actually say about it? There's no mention of any kind of violence directed toward human or animal. It doesn't say he struck any living creature. Jesus' goal was to empty the temple of the desecrating livestock market. A whip is how you get livestock to move anywhere. It wouldn't work against caged doves, of course, so Jesus simply told those sellers to remove them. Was Jesus disruptive? Absolutely. Confrontational? Of course. Did anyone get hurt? no biblical evidence of that at all. The whip did have the effect of letting some animals live to see another day. So using this gospel story as an argument that Jesus used violence to bring about change is a flimsy argument at best, and simply doesn't stand up under further scrutiny. At the same time, anyone who thinks Christians should always be quiet and non-confrontational in the face of evil or injustice or religious hypocrisy need to reckon with the Jesus of John 2. Or for that matter, the non-violent and confrontational Jesus of many other gospel stories. Now, bottom line, what was so upsetting to Jesus? Was it the fact that money was being exchanged in a holy place? If so, is Jesus also unhappy when our youth group sells brownies in the foyer? Some people actually have qualms about that based on this story. And to repeat what I said earlier, if you're bothered by that, don't be. I don't think there's any connection between mission-oriented fundraising and the crass commercialization of worship that had infected the temple and had actually become economically oppressive. What was happening inside the temple? This growth of the animal sacrifice industry was deeply offensive to and actively undermining the purposes of God. What do I mean? The first Passover, when the Israelites escaped Egypt, showed the spirit of sacrifice that God had in mind. Families were told there to choose their own best lamb for the sacrifice and to share it. In case one lamb was more than they needed, they had neighbors whose families were too small or too poor to have a whole lamb to themselves. Animal sacrifice, even when practiced individually, was a ritual that discerned, respected, and cared for the community. But as worship transitioned from a portable tabernacle to an elaborate and costly temple, so did the worship industry. And this industry helped establish and maintain a religious and social hierarchy. Favor with God was essentially for sale. So it seems likely that at least two offensive things were going on in the temple that made Jesus' anger bubble up. First, the poor were being economically exploited by the merchants and money changers. Those without means to provide their own unblemished animal had to buy them on the spot, probably at elevated prices, instead of having the community share with one another. Secondly, this court where the livestock market was set up, the court of the Gentiles, was specifically designed to provide a space for anyone at all to worship God freely, no matter your race, gender, or bloodline. You didn't have to be a ritually clean, circumcised Jewish male to worship in that space. This is what the prophet meant in the Isaiah text that we read today, that my house shall be a house of prayer for all nations. All nations. So this livestock market was taking over the very space designed to welcome all nations to worship. It was crowding out the Gentiles. And I think this was more than Jesus could take. So carefully, deliberately, and with forethought, I believe, Jesus walked into that desecrated space and acted on behalf of the God who was offended by it. John sees this as another window into understanding Jesus, as someone who acts on behalf of God, in God's place, as God in the flesh. So, let's bring this gospel story home. How does it connect with our story, our lives? It's so easy to hear John 2 condemn things that already offend us. TV evangelists begging for money to support a gilded lifestyle. Megachurch marketing themselves like a big box store to bring in more religious consumers. Or whatever it may be that offends our sensibilities about what church should be and worship should be. Surely, we are not the money changers, are we? We're not the ones running the temple and taking a cut, are we? As I sat with that question for a while this week, I started to feel more and more uncomfortable. I suspect we all would have a little pause if we owned up to the various ways our own worship can start to look like a transaction, a quid pro quo, so to speak. Maybe, more than we care to admit, our worship is for sale. Maybe, at least some of the time, if not most of the time, we bring ourselves to worship with an expectation that we will be rewarded. We invest an hour or of our time once a week. We help out when we're asked, participate in the service, drop money in the plate, sing along with the hymns when there's not a pandemic, and then expect a certain return on our investment. We expect to hear words of encouragement and comfort. Reassurance that God looks on us with favor, prayers that resonate with us, readings that reinforce our beliefs, songs we like in the style we like, sermons that only mildly challenge us but mostly inspire. No, we may not have a corrupted temple system, and there are no livestock blocking the way to our sanctuary. But let's not assume that our worship is morally superior to the first century Jews, who prompted Jesus' angry protest. I imagine that Jesus is pained whenever people show up at a house of prayer for all nations and end up not making room for all the nations or reinforcing a social hierarchy. We are invited to come to worship with a posture of radical openness to God and radical openness to our neighbor, ready for whatever will happen when the Spirit of God shows up. When we come to worship with any other agenda, we share something in common with the money changers and animal merchants. The same can be said of faith itself. Faith is openness and yieldedness to God. Faith is not a bargain with God. It's not a sales transaction. It's openness. We come open to an uncertain future, open to mystery and unsettled questions, open to having our worldview challenged, open to being transformed. Open to disappointment. open to trying and failing, open to being forgiven, open to loving and being loved by God.